John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Yeah, must mean it's a Friday because Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here in Studio 4. Hello there. Good morning.
Did you notice the weather outside? Good morning. Did you notice the weather outside? Warm?
It was certainly... Spring? I didn't have a hat and glove on this morning.
Okay. Do you want to give some credit to...
Come on.
Staten Island kid. I mean, you know, come on. He comes through.
If he was wrong, the rodent,
you'd criticize him. You'd blame the mayor. I'm not taking credit. I'm just saying.
I thought maybe you were taking
the
credit.
The Staten Island Zoo's woodchuck groundhog takes the credit.
Let us hope it stays that way. Something tells me it's not going to happen.
Probably not. We're only halfway through winter. Let's not get too carried away.
Exactly.
But actually, the long-term weather forecast is for alternate hot, cold, and that's not... I'm told you don't tend to have big storms during that, so maybe we're through it. Who knows?
So, well, have you been doing anything noteworthy this week? We'll get to it. Yeah. We'll get to the heavy lifting stuff in just a second.
We've got city's doing well.
Right.
We've got Nita Lowey on.
We have Congresswoman Nita Lowey,
who is one of my favorites,
on our telephone this morning. Congresswoman, good morning.
Well, good morning, and it's a pleasure to join this coffee cart. I'm in Washington, D.C.
You can come and join us every Friday.
Oh, I'd love to. This majority is keeping us here till 3 in the morning, wasting time.
Well, that's why they pay you the big dollars.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right.
Do you think how many times my salary she gets?
Oh, a lot.
Because
he doesn't get anything. Listen, Congresswoman, I understand you actually got some potentially more money for us here in New York City for security.
Well, I am delighted. And, of course, it's always a pleasure for me to be here with our great mayor and with you, John, and... this is the first step because, of course, this has to go through the Senate, and that's another challenge. But the program, the Urban Area Security Initiative, as the mayor knows, was created to help protect the most at-risk areas. But it started with 7 cities. It's now up to 64 cities, which dilutes the amount available for areas like New York that really face threats. So I am delighted that we were able to cut it to 25 cities. Look, we know between the smaller pot of money and the larger group of recipients, New York could have lost $15 million this year in anti-terror funding, and that just is not right. It's not acceptable, and that's why Steve Israel and I were able to pass an amendment to limit, as I said, the number of USCU recipients to 25 cities. And this would make the pot bigger for New York. Look, I've been to small towns across the country. They're very lovely, but there's no reason why New York should lose out on this vital anti-terror and preparedness money to address non-existent threats in cities that aren't at risk. So, look, you don't have to look further than Fazil Shahzad and Bajula Zazi to know the threats that we have out there. So, unfortunately, if the threat level is as high as Secretary Napolitano testified this week, and we're the threat in New York, we have to find the money, and we have to continue to work as hard as the mayor and Ray Kelly work to protect us.
Well, you know, Nita, thank you for doing this. I've always said that we should focus the money where the threat is. And, you know, I joke about agriculture money. Actually, we do get a little bit of money in the city from the Department of Agriculture. But, you know, they should focus on where agriculture is the major industry and where they produce the food that we all eat. Homeland Security Fund should go where the threats are, which are the big iconic cities. New York and Washington, I guess, first. But Chicago and Boston, Atlanta, there are other big cities as well. But, you know, for Congress to focus on this program more so on where the threats are is an encouraging step. And if it wasn't for leaders like Nita, who really, she's built a lot of credibility. That's one of the advantages of having somebody in Congress representing our state who's been there a long time. Because even though she's a very young woman, she has a lot of longevity.
Cute.
And that's what matters in Congress, and that and being smart and hardworking, and, yep. And she is. So.
Nita, thank you very much for coming on the program today. And as you say, this is at least a first step, so thanks a lot.
Well, thank you. excuse me, and I'm going to take the Homeland Security Committee. I already spoke to the new chair, Mr. Adeholt, back up to New York so that he can meet with Ray Kelly, meet with you, and really see what has to be done.
That'll
so
be...
thank you for your great leadership.
And I'm yours, invited. Too. And tell your husband I said hello.
Congresswoman Nina Lowey, this morning, isn't it interesting, and you and I have talked about this before, how things work in Washington or don't work in Washington, how seven cities that get on the list initially and through the years it creeps and gets larger and larger and larger, so everybody gets a piece
of the action. A better example than this actually is defense. Somebody once did, I don't know, years ago, a blow-up illustration of an aircraft carrier showing where each of the pieces came from, and out of the 50 states, 48 had some material input into that aircraft carrier. And the reason they do it is that's the way you get the local congressmen and senators
to vote for a new aircraft.
To vote for it. And, you know, I'm not so sure that's bad. You can argue whether it's good or bad, but it is the fact. And so if you want to get a bill passed, you've got to make sure that there's a number of other areas that benefit from it, so their representatives will be on your side. It has its advantages, it has its disadvantages. It's not the most efficient way. On the other hand, you know, the country, when we sit here and complain about the country, it has gone on pretty well for 235 years, and everybody says, oh, it used to be better. My mother will tell you the good old days were never the good old days.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we'll get into, as I referred to them at the top of the show, the heavy lifting stuff of this week in just a moment, 16 minutes after 8 o'clock. Let me remind you that if you have a question for the mayor, we've already got some folks on the telephone, 800-321-0710, coming right back.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
21 minutes after 8 o'clock, and again, 800-321-0710 is the number if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. All right, budget announced yesterday, first go-round, first chapter in this.
It is. We negotiate with the city council, and we are negotiating with Albany. We need the governor to do a couple things, which I'm optimistic he will do. I think there's enormous sentiment here to have him do a couple of these things. The state...
What are those things?
Well, the state cut back $2.1 billion in aid to the city, which has the effect on our budget of $1.4 billion. So when we say 2.1, they go yell and scream, oh, it's not 2.1, it's 1.4. They're both right, because the different numbers. The state, for example, gave us last November, after we did our budget in November, $400 million more for education. We never believed it, that they were going to do that. In there, this budget, they cut that $400 million. So that's $400 million they cut, but it doesn't affect us because we never counted on it. There's $300 million in some social service programs where they've cut, but we aren't going to pick up and fill in. So we won't have the income, but we won't have the expenses. That's $700 million right there. That's the difference between 2.1 and 1.4. But anyways, the state has cut back. I'm sympathetic. I've said we're going to help this governor. He comes into a situation that he didn't make, and it's a situation that we're all in, and we're all citizens of the state. We've got to find a ways to help him get this state through. But this couple of tests. Number one, his cuts, while painful, he has to spread the pain around. It has to be equitable. New York City got cut 100% of this one kind of aid, whereas the rest of the state got cut 2%. If he cut everybody by a third, that would be fair. And it would mean instead of us losing $300 million, we'd only lose $100 million. We'd get $200. So that's one thing I need from the governor to help us balance the budget. There are two other things, similar kinds of things to that, where we have to get some help from him. But what we've tried to do is to find things that either don't cost the state much or don't cost him anything. And if he will get the legislature to, and that's his job, he's the leader of, you know, the legislature, the executive's job really is to work with the legislature, explain to them why, and help bring them along. And this governor, I think, is going to have a great relationship with the legislature, better than the few previous ones, which is necessary. If you want to get through, it's a democracy, you got to have a good relationship. If he can do these things that don't cost them anything or don't cost them much, it will help us balance the budget. Now, if we don't get $600 million in aid, then we will cut our expenses another $600 million, which means across every agency they're going to have to take some cuts, which may mean a reduction in number of employees. It may mean a cancellation of some programs. I can't tell you specifically yet exactly what, but it's certainly the $600 million is no question we will have to have real cuts. The governor's staff keeps saying, oh, you know, the city has plenty of money. The city just used $1.8 billion of its money to make up for $850 million that the federal government cut back and $1 billion that the state cut back in education aid. And, you know, you had earlier on the leader of the United Federation of Teachers, Michael Mulgrew, for his members, it's for the kids, but his members are the ones who deliver the services, so they benefit. We this year are spending $2.1 billion more of city tax dollars on education.
This came from where? That money came from where?
Well, it all comes from our tax revenue is doing better. Because
that's the $2 billion increase.
There's $2 billion there. There is some federal monies that came in earlier than we count. There's some monies every year. We have a reserve. We have to wait until near the end of the year to see if we need it. If we don't need it, then we can use it, and we'll have to build a reserve for next year. But the bottom, if you want to step back and say what's happening, I've been saying this every time you and I are together here. The New York City economy is doing better. It's not back to where it was. It's not where you want it to be, but it is clearly doing better. I'm not sure it's doing better than the entire country, but it's doing better than a lot of parts of the state and the country. Better economy means better tax revenues. We have record low unemployment, lower than the countries. We have more job creation than almost any place else per capita. We have tourism that's off the charts. That generates an enormous amount of jobs. We have just cut another $1.6 billion. We have over $5 billion less in expenses because of all of these cuts we keep doing. And you and I have talked about it. Last time it was $1.6 billion announced in November. Those cuts are been implemented, and they will save us money going forward. Our big problem is our pension costs keep getting going up and getting out of control and are out of control. Whether people deserve it or not is a separate issue, but the fact of the matter is we spent in 2002 $1.5 billion a year in pensions. This year we're spending $7 billion. Next year we're spending $8.5 billion. Why? Well, some people say it's the stock market because the pension funds are invested in stocks. But if you look, and we published the results, maybe the papers, newspapers should show it, the pension costs went up when the market was going up. Pension costs did not stop going up when the market went down, but they didn't go up any faster. And then the markets recovered dramatically, and they haven't stopped going up.
The pensions have automatic escalators, correct? I mean, on a year, on a go forward?
If you take a look, there's three things that that really cost all the money. One is a reduction in our assumptions as to how much it's a technical
return
thing.
On investment.
Next year there's an extra $1 billion. It goes from 7 to 8.5. We'd really go from 7 to 7.5, except there's another $1 billion in there in cost because we're going to have to make that adjustment. There's the stock market, which has a minimal effect, but some. The real thing is, if you take a look, we keep giving increasing benefits. Now, the benefits that you have escalators if salaries go up, if people retire with more overtime. There are a variety of things, but the biggest thing is that we roughly 80% of the city's expenses for personnel is in pensions, and we don't negotiate that with the unions.
So
we should negotiate both salaries and the benefits.
The legislature
The state legislature gives pension benefits that even the law says even they can't take them away once they give them, and the city has to pay.
And even in the last year, even in the last 12 to 18 months, they're still piling on money.
Yes,
benefits.
Yes.
And this just doesn't make much
sense.
I mean,
it does make sense you know, I keep coming back to this. If somebody's acting irrationally, chances are you don't understand what their objectives are. There must be a think about it, and I'm not to talk about it here, but you think about why would a legislator do that, knowing we have problems. Okay.
Okay. You can answer your question yourself. As things stand today, is the 66 or the 6,000 teachers that you talked about that are going to have to be laid off in this budget, is that a done deal? Is that in concrete that they will be?
Well, I don't know what the state is going to do. If the state were to come through and help us plug the $600 million budget gap, that's the first thing we can do, and that has nothing to do with the 6,000. Then we have to find, if we get more money, we'll have to step back and say, do you want, for example, fewer teachers and more cops? Do you want another firehouse or another school? I mean, it's those kinds of either-or decisions. So it isn't automatic that if you had more than $600 million in extra, in new revenues coming in budget balancing revenues, that you would do that. But certainly until you get 600, there's no chance of doing that. Because if you didn't do that, you'd have to go and lay off cops and firefighters. We have protected education. I think the amount of money, the increase in city tax dollars that's gone to education in 2012 versus 2011, maybe with the exception of Chicago or one or two other cities, the largest amount anybody's put to education, and that's just our increase. But, I mean, if you take a look and step back, the entire increase in our budget, because our city debt funding has gone up by 12%, even though the total budget is down a touch, 65.9 to 65.2, something like that. But in city tax dollars, it's gone up about 12%, but it is either totally to make up for the lost state and federal monies, so otherwise you'd have devastating cuts in the schools, and you just can't do that. This is our future of our kids. Or increases in mandated pension, health care, debt service, and Medicaid costs. Well, we don't have any choice. There are these mandates. We have to do it, period. End of story. Either the federal government or the state government passes a law saying you have to do it, and we're not going to help you. Okay. Nothing you can do about it.
All right. How about when it comes to summer jobs for teenagers? 5,500, it is estimated, is being cut in this particular budget.
Which do you, the bottom line is, it would be nice to have the revenue to do lots of things. Not everybody would agree on what those lots of things are, but we live in a different world today than we did before. The world today is there are not as much available. And the public, incidentally, probably isn't as willing to spend as they used to be. Both of those things.
Well, I think that's exactly the point, and that's what we're seeing in Wisconsin. We're seeing it in California.
Yeah, my responsibility is for New York City. And in New York City, I've said, we're not going to raise taxes, and we are still going to provide the basic services. And the ways you do those when you don't have enough money is you grow. So we start out in I view the budget process very different. I tried to say that yesterday, and I didn't see anybody pick up on it. But I view it very differently than the federal estate government does. You start out, what do we need to do? What things does the public really need, not wasting money, but everybody or most people would agree you need? I can tell you we need schools, we need fire, police, sanitation, corrections. We need to help the people who literally don't have anything to eat or a roof over their heads, can't walk away from that. We need to invest some money in cultural institutions. That is the big driver, I think, more than anything else, of getting that 48.7 million tourists here, and they create an enormous number of jobs. That's our economy. But you start out, what do you need to do? Then how do you do it as efficiently as you can? One of my meetings this morning was at a long meeting with Steve Goldsmith and going over ideas on how to reduce the city's expenses and still provide those services. Then if you can, you get the list of things you got to do, and then you figure out how best you can do them. And then you go and work on how much money you have to raise and where it comes from and should you do this kind of financing or that kind of taxing or that sort of thing. I think if you look, other governments seem to start out focusing on how much money to raise or not raise, and then go and work down. I just think that that's not the ways to really have a future.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let me take a break right here. Speaking of money, we'll make a couple of dollars for the company if we can. And again, a reminder, 800-321-0710. That's your connection to Mayor Michael Bloomberg this morning here at WOR. Here's Joe Bartlett with news.
Give John a call now. 800-321-0710.
All right, 20 minutes now before 9 o'clock in the morning, and, budgetary conversation is pretty much what is happening around this country. Let me ask you the question, Mr. Mayor. Why do you believe that legislative bodies, I asked Michael Mulgrew this as well, why do you think legislative bodies around the country all seem to look at the answer to their budgetary problems with the reduction in pensions and contributions to health care costs? It's almost generic. I mean, everybody's come up with the same answer.
The model of government is government. What government fundamentally does is they take tax dollars and they use it to hire people who deliver services, and people that get salaries and benefits. So if you look at just where the money goes in government, it does go to pay people to provide services. So if you want to cut back, in the end, you're going to probably have to cut people. You can cut your electric bill only so far, and then they turn off the lights. Government fundamentally legislators are responsible for.
Do you believe this to be anti-union or just a fact of life?
I've said this a thousand times. I don't blame unions for asking for more. That's their job. The union leader's job is to get the best working conditions for the most money and, I guess, the least hours for their members. That's what they're hired for. They're not responsible for the service, if you will, whether it's educating the kids or putting out the fires. That's not the union's job. It's the union member's job. So the teachers in the union responsible for education, but not the teachers' union. The firefighters responsible for putting out the fires and keeping us safe, which they do. Not the union leader's job. The police officer's job, keep us protected from terrorist bad guys. They do it, but not the union. The problem is when they ask for more, we, government representing the people, give them things that we can't afford. And saying no is very difficult, but you got to do that. That's what government's job. So I've never blamed the municipal unions for our problems. I think we should all look in a mirror. Our legislators and executives give away stuff, and we don't get it back. And it's not cutting back is not anti-union. Cutting back is pro. I guess you could say pro taxpayer.
Well, that's really the discussion of where we have gotten to.
The taxpayers want services but don't want to pay for them. Okay, fine. The taxpayers deep down inside know they have to pay for them. But the taxpayers want the services delivered efficiently. And, you know, government can do only certain things. We have lots of restrictions, for example, from Albany on how we buy services and deliver services in New York, which raise our costs dramatically. That's one of the things we're asking the governor to champion in the legislature and to change. We have lots of laws. You say, well, why do we do this? Well, because the law requires us to do that.
All right, Mr. Mayor, pick up your earpiece so that you can monitor this, because there are children throughout New York that hear this in the morning.
Morning, it's me, Magic Johnson here. I won 5 NBA championships and Olympic gold medal. So I'm calling the shots today. Get up out of bed, into school, try hard, do well. School got me to where I am today. So be there every single day. And of course, give it your best shot.
All right, Magic. Has this been implemented?
No, it starts, I think, next week's a school vacation
week.
So the week after.
Okay.
You know, absenteeism, you can't get an education if you don't go to school. And it's in everybody's interest that the kids go to school. You say, well, I don't care about that kid. That kid's going to be a voter or at least a citizen with you. And if you want to have society better so you can enjoy it, you want everybody to share and to understand their responsibilities, you don't get those skills or ethics until you go to school. And so what we're trying to do is find ways to get kids who are chronically absent to go to school. So, you know, you use role models, Trey Song and Jesse McCartney and Jose Reyes and Magic Johnson and the mayor, one of the icons.
You've got the mayor?
Mayor's
now
even
that's not, scary.
We'll see whether the kids show up.
Hi, Michael Bloomberg here. Okay, kid, out of the bed.
Right. If you don't like the calls when you get them, you can just press one and we'll stop. But I would suggest to parents, if you're getting the calls, there's a problem. And maybe you want to, if you really want to do something for your kid, I know raising kids is not easy. I can tell you how to raise yours, incidentally. It's
of course,
mine that
absolutely.
Are more difficult.
Absolutely.
But you got to, when the kids don't want to go to school, you still got to get them to go.
All right. I had Christine Quinn on earlier this week. In fact, she was sitting in the same chair that you are here in Studio 4, and we were talking about this, that, and the other thing. And she thinks that your call for a cut in capital spending is maybe not the way
well,
to go.
Well, we have $6 billion a year in debt service. That's $6 billion that could go and buy an awful lot of other things. I think we've done the right thing in making the investments in a water tunnel and a subway and the bridges and schools and all the things that were on a capital budget, but it's just getting out of hand. And so we talked about 20% and finally settled after listening to Chris, who had a lot of say in this, incidentally. I think a 10% cut and stretch out. It's not going to solve all the problems, but it will reduce the size of the growth in debt service while still giving us most of the things we want. And current projects will continue on. This is for things in the future. It's the 10% is in your 10-year plan, and who knows what's going to happen down the road.
Again, it's all the contraction, right? A contraction of
where
we were.
Whether it's debt service money or money to pay employees or, every single thing. It's all the money's fungible. If we could reduce our debt service, it gives us either the opportunity to tax less or to spend it on other things. And that's what society and democracy will argue about. But it would be a lot better if they could have that argument. If we just spend it on debt service, they can't even have that argument.
Did you see the survey that was done? It was a national survey about how long people generally, on average, have to wait at a hospital. It was cities around the country, and New York City came in 46th out of 50 at almost 5-hour average wait in many of the
hospitals. A lot of people use the emergency rooms instead of having a private doctor. The president tried to address this issue. Congress tried to address it. There's no easy answers. We have a healthcare system where too many people get sick. We spend too much money. We're sort of focusing on the wrong kind of healthcare. Our focus is almost exclusively on if you get sick, treating you, rather than a lot of money going to keep you from getting sick. And if you look at Western Europe, we spend $7,000 per person per year for healthcare. You say, oh, I didn't spend seven this year. No, but if you live long enough, you'll spend a lot more than that. It'll average out to $7,000 per person per year, everybody in this country. In Western Europe, they spend $3,500, $3,300, less than half. And their life expectancy is a couple years longer than ours.
Question on that, on those figures that you know, does their medicine, is the cost of an MRI the same in Germany as it is here in the United States, for example? So what I'm saying is, are those numbers comparable?
Sure, because
are they apples to apples?
Well, you know, the cost of an MRI is going to be a function of, number one, more than anything else, probably the public's willingness to pay. If you said we're not going to pay that much for an MRI, the MRI companies would find a ways to deliver
and
it.
And with our third-payer system, nobody ever sees the cost of that MRI.
That is exactly right. But, you know, there's always differences here and there. But Western Europe to the United States is a pretty good comparison. There's people of all interests and economic levels. Diets are very similar. In fact, one of the big problems in this world is we have gone from a world where hunger is the worst problem. It's still a very big problem. There are people starving. But where that used to be the worst problem, and today, arguably, by a lot of people would argue that obesity has replaced it. So there's still people starving, but we're also particularly in poorer...
Eating too much.
In eating the wrong things. And in the poorer the society, the worse, the faster obesity is growing as a problem. And it's really,
I'm not sure how you get a handle on that one either.
Well, you know, you can. We're trying to do it. Thank you very much. In New York City, you know, everything doesn't work. We have calorie counts up now, and the federal government now requires calorie counts. Some people say nobody pays attention. That may be true, but number one, at least it's there. So if we can educate people to pay attention, which is another part of the process, they'll at least have the information. And it's just one of the many steps. Smoking is going to kill a billion people this century. In the United States, we have made progress. In Western Europe, we have made progress. People would have said, you'll never get people to stop smoking in bars and restaurants. You'll never get people to stop smoking in Italy and France and Spain. And they have. And smoking is down considerably. The sad thing is the smoking, tobacco companies are targeting places where people don't understand how bad smoking is for them. They're poor and don't have educations, and that's where all their efforts are. So half the smokers in the world are now in, I think it's Russia, China, India, Bangladesh, and Indonesia.
They will catch up, but for too many people, it'll be way too late.
You got it.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we've got a whole rack of people all set to go here with questions on our telephones. We will get to those in just a moment, 10 before 9.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Where did Bill Rock come from? 5 minutes before 9 o'clock.
Before you go to the calls, just let me point out, we got some good news during Fashion Week. 11 leaders from the fashion industry just joined our immigration reform coalition called the Partnership for a New America. And what's happening in the fashion business, John, they generate $9 billion in wages locally, $1.7 billion in tax revenues. That's like all the money.
$1.7 billion,
a lot of money. This week is an enormous thing, the Fashion Week. But what's happened is some of the fashion people can't get their models over here, and they've started to cancel. Faith Cates, the Next Model Management, was telling us the other day that they've started to cancel some of the photo shoots because they can't get the models in or the cameras. This industry could easily move. Could move overseas again. We have double the number of fashion houses, I think, of any other place in the world. But we could lose this business very easily. We just have to fix immigration.
You mean to tell me we have to import pretty girls? I don't think so.
No, but the designers want to come over here and create jobs here.
No,
we're not letting them in.
I understand.
And the girls want to come here.
Joe's got a question for you, Mr. Mayor. Pick up your earpiece there.
Okay.
Joe, go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Question for you. Why don't the public schools take a page out of the Catholic schools? They do it for a lot less money. They graduate 99% of the kids, while the public schools graduate maybe 50, 60%. The teachers do it for a lot less more money. They have more students in the classroom. With the public schools, it seems like you're just throwing the money out of the building.
But Joe, you know, it is. Some of the Catholic schools are very good. Some of them are not. Just like some of the public schools are very good, some of them are not. If you take a look at the Catholic schools, though, they have had some real economic problems. There's no secrets here. Teachers want to get paid, and whether they teach in a Catholic school or teach in a public school, there may be some differences in compensation. But a teacher in a Catholic school still has to get enough money to feed the family, and they still have to pay their electric bills, and they still have to do all of the same things. They do a great job in many, many cases, and it's right that you're right. When I've talked to the Archbishop and the Cardinal about this again and again and again, they graduate a big percentage of their kids, but they don't get all the kids, and the public schools are doing a great job too. It's just a much different job, and you can't just say, okay, the Catholic schools have the right formula. They have a formula that works in many cases. Public schools have a formula that works in many cases. We can all learn from each other. But they aren't home free. They are closing schools because the economics just don't work anymore for them. And we're trying to help them stay open or absorb those kids into the public schools.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Let's go to Roseanne. Roseanne, your question for the mayor. We're short on time. Get right to it, please.
Okay. Hi, Mayor.
Hi.
You're doing a great job.
Thank
you. Love you. Called 311 about potholes on our street. There are a lot of potholes, and they came and they did fix them, but they did not do a very good job. There's still many on the street, and the ones that they fixed, they didn't fix properly.
All right, we'll get you, stay on, and we'll get the name and phone number from you, and we'll find out where that is. We just gave another $2 million for potholes to the repair to the Department of Transportation, and we fixed 80,000 since January 1. That's 50% more than last year. But, Roseanne, two problems. One, the big storms, the plows just tear it all up. The alternating warm and cold weather tears up the streets, and you can't fix most of these permanently until the summer, because the repairs done now don't last. In the summer, they'll last more. I came across a street yesterday. I was trying to read my speech before I got to the place I had to give it, and we were bumping so much I think fell off right off my lap.
Did you call 311?
I did not, but I have it on my list to do
all
so,
right.
And I will do today.
Diana, I've got 15 seconds for you, my dear. Sorry, Ooh. Go.
Okay, I live in a multi-unit building. There's somebody underneath that smokes in the building. Now, in the park, on the beach, you can walk away from it. You can't walk away from it in the building.
I know. Talk to the building. I mean, in the end, at the moment, that is up to the building. I don't know that there's any stomach in the city council to pass a bill to try to change that. An awful lot of hotels have banned smoking. An awful lot of apartment buildings have banned smoking. I think the only honest answer is get the other neighbors in your building to go to the management of the building and say, we're not going to take it anymore.
It's fascinating how that has taken hold, as you were commenting before. The clock never stops. It's always got a hold on us, and that's going to be it for today. We'll get together next Friday.
I am looking forward to it.
Be well. Enjoy.
And you.
Thank you very much. Coming up, we've got Cyrus Vance, Manhattan District Attorney. They made a big bust this week on gangs, and we'll get into that. We had a three-part series a couple of weeks ago. More info straight ahead.